Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, you know, when you think of fashion, you don't automatically think Chicago. I mean, it's not usually mentioned alongside cities like New York or Paris or Milan. But that hasn't stopped Chicago native Maria Pinto from making an impact on the world of fashion and design. She's one of the most recognizable names working in women's clothing. She has set up a couple of different shops here in Chicago over the years and currently set up shop in Chicago's West Loop. The new boutique is called M2057 by Maria Pinto, which is named after her clothing line that she started with the help of Kickstarter. Pinto has been worn by several stars in Hollywood, but her biggest fan, and some would say model, is First Lady Michelle Obama. Pinto grew up in Chicago. She went to high school in Palatine. She went to college at the School of the Art Institute. In short, a true Chicago original. And she's my guest tonight at the big table. Maria Pinto, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you.
Nice to meet you. Let's talk about the new boutique, M2057. First, the name, 2057.
Okay, so M2057 came about because my objective with this collection is it's the idea of fashion meeting technology, and I wanted a number. And as it happened, I was sitting across from my mother 4 years ago, who at the time was 96, do the math. July 7th, right. She's turning 100.
Wow.
And so M2057 is the year I turn 100. So you don't have to guess my age. You know, it's all out on the table, which is not typical of fashion people. They tend to like to hide their age. But it was just a number.
All over Washington Street.
All over Washington Street. Yeah. But it was just about choosing a number. And then, you know, choosing names and numbers have to have some meaning.
I mean, I mentioned in the beginning, you've had boutiques here in Chicago before. I mean, you had one early in 2000, 2001, one again in 2010. Why get back into setting up shop here in Chicago?
I had one. It was on Jefferson, and we closed in 2010. So we launched this collection on e-commerce, and it was always in the back of my mind that people still like to touch and feel, at least for the first time. And I think having a physical presence, a space, continues to tell the story of the brand, the experience, what we want our clients to feel when they walk in the store. It's kind of as I like to tagline to the collection, is deconstructed couture. So, you know, we're in a very modern industrial neighborhood next door to great galleries. And, you know, from the moment you walk in the door, the music selected, the being offered a glass of champagne and just be able to relax and exhale. And so to me, it's part of the brand experience, as well as the fact that I think women will always want to try clothes on.
Well, I mean, it started the brand, the M2057 line started as a digital only. I mean, it started with Kickstarter. Talk about that. I mean, you use Kickstarter in such an interesting way. Most of the time I've heard of crowdsourcing happening is for a movie or maybe for a television show or whatever it might be. But for a fashion line, talk about why you use Kickstarter and the success you had.
So I was kind of hesitant when I first heard about it. And the more research I did, the more I really appreciated the concept, because what it allows you is the opportunity to, in 45 days, not only raise $274,000, which we broke the space records in the fashion space, but we had over 600 active customers around the world.
Wow.
You can't, I mean, if I went to an investor and I said, can I have $275,000? I wouldn't have had that. I had proof of concept, I had orders booked, and we were ready to roll. It was very new, so it was really challenging to pull it together. But, you know, it's a community effort.
Well, how hard was it without that touch and feel, without that for you as a designer to not have the customer be able to walk into what they can now, but before, like, creating a digital design shop?
You know, even with the digital concept, there was still a lot of touch points. So even when we did Kickstarter, part of the success of Kickstarter was that we created, through my network of friends and contacts, we went to New York, we went to, and in Chicago, we had countless events hosted for us, little introductory parties.
Right. Yeah,
because
yeah.
Not only did they not know the collection, but they didn't know what Kickstarter was. More and more people know what it is now, but when we launched, women would look at me like, where are you coming from? So, you know, we really broke through a lot. We had a lot of barriers to break down.
Obviously, being able to get back into the store, you know, in the West Loop. Talk about what that means for you as a designer to essentially make that jump back from the Kickstarter stuff to a brick and mortar space, because that seems to have made this full circle. And it is a different experience than you've had in the past.
Yeah. So there's so many facets that I think are really important to the company. One, I think it gives us a sense of feeling grounded and feeling really part of the community. We have a physical space that people can really come to. And we still play in the digital space. So when you come to the shop, and we like to call it a studio, it's not a true retail experience in the sense that we know when we walk into any other boutique.
Yeah, how so?
When you come in, we have every style and every size so that you could try it on, but you don't leave with anything. You go to an iPad, you order it, and you receive it in 2 days. So our clients are really happy. At first, I was a little concerned, like, will women right. really get this idea?
I would think they'd be like, what do you mean? I want it right now.
I can't take it with me now. Yeah. Actually, a lot of them really like it because then they don't have to drag around bags, and it just shows up at the door really nicely packaged. And so it's working well.
Do you see that as a possible future trend for fashion?
Absolutely.
Where you think that it might be more about blending the digital opportunities that people know from shopping online and an experience and essentially changing the way that commerce is done in fashion?
Yeah, I really think so. And I mean, and the beauty of this business model, and I have to credit Andy Dunn from Bonobos. He started this mm-hmm. idea, and he stumbled on it. He thought he was going to be an e-commerce play only, and he saw evidence was his showroom in New York. Friends started coming in, and he really saw an uptick in his sales, so he realized he calls his guide shop, same concept. And I think the blend is pretty critical. And what it allows us, though, is very small footprints because I don't have to have inventory in the store.
Right.
And so I can continue to deliver. My objective with M2057 is to deliver great value. Our dresses start at $275. My dresses in my Maria Pinto collection start at $1,000.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, we want to keep that value coming to the customer. So if we can open, and we plan to open stores over the next, you know, couple of years to keep our footprints very small, we can, you know, we can achieve a greater customer experience without forfeiting some of the overhead, you know, without suffering the consequences of overhead.
For you as a designer, and you mentioned your, you know, the Maria Pinto brand, and then there's the M2057 brand. Do you run the risk as a designer and a businesswoman to balance the brands that you've had and you've had success with and the new ones that are coming in that might be at different price points? Does that play a role in sort of making sure that everything is accounted for when it comes to the Maria Pinto brand?
Absolutely. And I think M2057 is very much in alignment with the core values of Maria Pinto. And I think it's an evolution of an idea. I don't think M2057 would be what it is without my having done what I did before, because, you know, these are things you learn from, right? So I'm taking everything I've learned about design and fit and fabric and construction and bringing it to a different place. And that's why we call it deconstructed couture, because the deconstruction comes from this idea. The fabrics are all machine washable. They're all cut edge.
Oh, that's
so
great.
They're very deconstructed, but yet very kind of constructed. It's a kind of a contradiction in itself.
Maria, I'd still find a way to ruin it.
No, you wouldn't.
I would.
Trust
me. There's something with me and nice fabrics that just doesn't work. Maria Pinto is the fashion designer, Chicago fashion designer, in studio with me. We're talking about her new line, M2057 by Maria Pinto, which is the store also on Washington Street in the West Loop. Let's take a quick break. I want to talk about growing up in fashion. You talked a little bit about, you know, learning from, you know, experience. And I want to get to what you've learned over the years when it comes to fabrics and cuts and all the stuff that I really don't understand. I can't wait. Maria Pinto in studio. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the big table, Maria Pinto, legendary Chicago fashion designer. So many stars in Hollywood have worn her stuff. Michelle Obama, a huge, huge supporter of Maria Pinto. Her shop in the West Loop, M2057 by Maria Pinto, is right there at Green in Washington. And it's part of a new digital facing brand for Maria Pinto, who's my guest tonight. Let's talk about you. I mentioned the intro. You're from Chicago. You grew up in Chicago, but you moved out to Palatine, went to high school in Palatine. When did you start with an interest in fashion?
You know, I was probably 12 or 13, and I begged my mother to get me a sewing machine, and I started making clothes. It was always a blend between fashion and art. That's why I chose to go to the Art Institute, so I can continue to paint, which I still continue to mm-hmm. do. But I knew since I was like 12, 13. Yeah.
And so you got the sewing machine. And
got the sewing
machine. What were the first things you were doing with the sewing machine?
Making myself clothes. And then my girlfriends would see them, and they're like, I want that. So, you know, the entrepreneur came out early. It's like, sure, you could have it, you know? And I started selling clothes to my girlfriends, and I just
What were the clothes like? I mean, what were you sewing? I mean, did you have a style at that point? Did you have sort of a brand at that point?
It always comes to this. I'm kidding. Well, you know, I when you're in fashion, you're always cutting edge, right? So do the math. I was in that weird little cycle where, you know, it was kind of Taxi Driver, Jodie Foster, short shorts. That was my go-to. And just really fun clothes, like, you know, things that I saw and I would copy. And my prom dress was a Halston dress, which was really outlier for all, compared to all my other girlfriends wearing, like, you know, poof. And I was wearing Halston. It started as a fun thing, and then I realized it was a passion.
When did you make that realization? When was it that you were like, this is fun, I like doing this, I like making my clothes, but you know what? I want to do this for a living.
I think I really always knew that, and I kind of, yeah, I think it was just really sort of innate. And I never thought twice about any other path, you know. In the next life, I'll probably come back as a psychotherapist, but for now, we'll stay with fashion.
Now you stay with fashion. They're similar, right?
Really, very similar, trust me.
Okay, so you mentioned earlier on just about the cuts and the fabrics and the garments involved in this. You know, when you went to the School of the Art Institute, and even after that, you know, continued your studies in New York, talk about the world that was offered to you when, as someone who was into fashion, making your own clothes and being an outlier in Palatine, when was it when you started to realize the different things that were available to you, the textures, the fabrics, the different things that are going to ultimately be the Maria Pinto brand?
Yeah. I have to say, I mean, I think of things like this as like a gift. Like, you know, it's something you either have or you don't. And it's something you either you activate or don't, right? I think most of us are gifted with creativity. It's just always been the subconscious thing. And I always was curious. I was always reading magazines, looking at the history of fashion, just super curious, going to stores, looking at clothes that I, you know, couldn't even fathom owning, and just studying them inside out, you know.
So for a Luddite like me, what do you mean by studying the clothes? Like, what exactly does that mean?
It means like looking at a jacket and looking at the lapel, looking at the way a shoulder is set in, looking at how is the construction of a sleeve, looking at the lining, looking at just everything. And then, you know, salespeople would come in and look at me like, okay, can I help you? And I would always, you know, bow. And I tell my interns now, it's really okay. You should do this. This is a very important aspect of your studies. You just explain who you are. You're not going to, you know, steal. You're just there to study. And they really appreciate it. And then they welcome you back next time.
I mean, is there a point in your career where you realized, you know, after, you know, because you went to the School of the Art Institute and you continued your studies New York.
Yeah.
What was the point where you're like, you know what? I have a brand. I'm not going to work for other people. I'm not going to, you know, at one point I saw in your Wikipedia said you were assistant to Jeffrey Bean. Like, mm-hmm. What point were you like, you know what? My end goal is to be my own designer, not design for other people.
Yeah. On some level, I would say it was premature. But on the other side of it, you just do what you do, right?
You mean premature in...
And having, like I tell, you know, when I meet with students that are getting out of school, I'm like, don't be so anxious because school is just the first phase of study. And so I interned at Jeffrey Bean. I had other job offers from other companies in New York, but I wanted to work for a master, even if I had to pick up pins. Mm. So I interned for Jeffrey Bean and worked at night to support myself. And it was the best experience ever. And then it was about a year. I worked for over two collections there and all facets of the process. And then I decided to come back. But at that point, I was 33 because I went back to school when I was a little older. I went back to school at 30 to the Art mm-hmm. Institute. And I just knew right away. And I was very lucky because what I launched with was accessories, like these extravagant wraps and scarves. And unbeknownst to me, this was a true Malcolm Gladwell tipping point. The Pashmina phase hit.
Right.
Remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, good. You're of the age. I say this to my interns, and they look at me like, Pashmina, what?
What would that be? That would be...
1991.
I was going to say 90s. I would have gone a little later, but 1991,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Pashminas are in, and Maria decides to make scarves and wraps. And I was so lucky because one of the most formidable, amazing women in Chicago, Joan Weinstein, who owned Ultimo at the time, bought my collection immediately. And with that sort of... you know, blessing, so to speak, it opened up doors. I was in Barney's and Saks and Bergdorf the next season.
And for you, I mean, to go back to school, to be able to be in your early 30s and have this happen, What's going through your mind? Are you thinking about the idea of Maria Pinto being the brand? Or, I mean, are you just ecstatic that the big stores are taking your line?
You're just trying to stay alive. yeah, it's a combination of all of it. Like, you know, with the problem with fashion is that it's moved so fast. So, you know, you're like never in the moment. So, yeah, great. I have these orders in front of me. But at the same time, it's like get that over with because you've got to get on with the designing of the next collection, reaching out to the next layer of clients. So it's just this layering and layering. It's a massive jigsaw
puzzle.
So it's
not just one. Hey, I'm in Barney's. Yay. Let's
yeah,
get the party going on.
No, no. They're always, yeah, that's over. Like the moment it happens.
Maria Pinto is my guest tonight here at the Big Table. She's a world-renowned fashion designer, lives here in Chicago. Her shop, M2057 by Maria Pinto, is on Washington Street in the West Loop. Let's take a quick break for the news. When we come back, let's talk about that fashion industry. I don't know much about it. I only know what I see more and more I see on blogs or what I see on E. It feels like E is all fashion at this time. But mm-hmm. But I'd love to get your take a little bit on the industry and what's happening. When we return, stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest tonight at the Big Table, Maria Pinto, world-renowned fashion designer here in Chicago. Her shop, M2057 by Maria Pinto, is in the West Loop right now. I said it before the news that I really want to talk about the fashion industry. I don't know much about it. What I do know, and it's always been the case, but it seems maybe because there's just more activity because the media has grown so much, that it has such pop culture crossover. Mm-hmm. That you're seeing the Kim Kardashians and the Kanye West and everybody in between getting into fashion, acting as if they're a fashion designer or a mogul. And, am I reading that right, that that's getting bigger than it was maybe 10, 20, 25 years ago?
Oh, no, you're understating it, if anything. It's so real. And I think it's kind of annoying. I mean, from the perspective of, you know, someone who really pride myself on my craft, right? Fashion is about, there's an artistry to it. There's an understanding of the making of clothing. And there's something so, it becomes so trivial when anyone could slap their name on a collection. And because they're so notable and they have so much power behind them, you know, they could be a pretty big force in the retail space.
It obviously makes the job harder, but from an industry standpoint, does it? I mean, you have been on record before saying that it is a cutthroat business. Has it become harder for you to be able to have an impact when you're now not only competing with other great fashion designers, but competing with people who have a brand maybe outside of fashion, music, television, film, that kind of thing?
I mean, I think there's certainly always competition, and what degree of it, I don't know. What the degree or of it is or isn't, I don't know. But I would say, you know, what I like to believe is true about M2057 is that we're very distinct. We've hit a mark that's not being addressed by a lot of other brands. There's pieces that you might find in other brands, but not as a whole. And a lot of this, you know, came, I was creative director at Marc Chael for a period of time after I closed in 2010. And I was on the other side of things. I was buying collections. And I had this, you know, view into the world of really being able to study what was in the marketplace, especially in this price range. And that's where I saw the void for this, like, clean kind of work we're doing. So I think as long as you're doing something unique, you hopefully find your
space.
I mean,
but that is, I mean, like I've said throughout this interview, you know, fashion's not necessarily my go-to, but I'm curious about, you know, what we see when we see in the New York Fashion Week and on what's on the runway. And then on the other side, you know, what people shop for at The Gap, you know, or even Old Navy to an extent. And what's the in-between? Because when I see the stuff on the runway, I'm like, are people actually wearing that? You know? So talk about the relationship between the fashion industry, the high fashion industry that we see and the glitz and glamour, and people actually buying clothes.
I mean, I think there's a part of runway that has become really about show. You know, it's always been a show, but the show before was really legitimately things that you were going to, in all likelihood, buy and wear. And I think more and more the spectacle has become more relevant. And there's always the collection that's in the showrooms, you know, from these same designers that is what actually ends up in the store and potentially on people's backs. And the fantasy ends up on the red carpet, or the fantasy ends up in, you know, some on a celebrity's back because it's beautiful and it's, you know, interestingly done. But is how wearable is it, right?
Right.
So I don't know. I think there's a little free fall happening in terms of the whole fashion retail space. I mean, I think the internet has turned everything on its upside down.
Is that a good thing? I mean, is that a good thing for you? You've seen the fashion world change. I mean, and even your time at Marc Chael, and now you know the ins and outs. You must have seen how we talk about the music industry all the time. We talk about the film industry. And the fashion industry has to have changed over the last 20 years.
Yeah, it's changed dramatically. And I mean, I think we're all trying to stay ahead of the curve, right? Isn't that what it's about? Mm-hmm. I always compare it to like technology, right? I remember 1981, seeing someone coming into this restaurant with this massive cell phone, right? Like a brick. Now, look what we're carrying. So what's next? The chip under our skin. So in fashion, more than anything, anywhere, you need to be way ahead of the curve. So do I think it's an advantage? It's not whether it's an advantage. It's what we're living in. And so I need to be engaged and embraced in it and try to find that intersection.
Is it hard to adapt for you? I mean, No,
that's been pretty seamless, to be honest, in a really kind of a very exhilarating way. And I thank all my customers who are so loyal and have really appreciated where I'm at with this new collection.
Let's talk about where you're at. Being in Chicago as opposed to setting up shop in Manhattan or mm-hmm. Miami Beach or, mm-hmm. you know, or Paris in that regard. Talk about why you stay here in Chicago. It doesn't seem like the fashion industry is here.
No, it's not at all. I'm not really sure. I mean, I referenced Joan Weinstein earlier, and in an interview with Women's Wear Daily about me, she said Maria beats to her own drum. And in the same interview, I said Chicago was my incubator. I think there's pros and cons to working and staying in Chicago, and I'm glad I did, but there's always been moments where you kind of question it. In fact, even when I launched this new collection in 2013, someone said to me, if you move to New York, the fashion industry will really take you seriously. Well, that's all I needed. I mean, my rebellious side came out. I'm like, that's so ridiculous. Right. We live in this is a global community.
And I think you're doing okay. Right?
I think I'm doing just fine. And because of that, it was like, you know, for a second, I had thought about moving to New York at that time before this, you know, statement. And I was like, that's the whole reason not to.
Is that the prevailing feeling in the fashion industry, especially in this country, that if you're not in New York, you're not in fashion?
I think it's less so now. But I think the reality is there are certain, when I go to New York, I mean, there's so many things right at your fingertips. Like I'm going to New York next week for 2 days, right? I'm across the street from my factory. I go across the street to buy buttons. I go around the corner to some, you know, another vendor. You know, we don't have that here. And so I think there's some, you know, advantages to being in both cities. The mm-hmm. advantage of being in New York is you're in this hub and there's this community that you're
right.
working with together.
And resources.
But for
right.
some of us, that might not be the best thing. And so for me, it's, you know, you find a different way to reach in. And I also feel like there's something energizing about coming back to Chicago. I need space. I don't need to be around so much. There's a certain kind of energy there that sometimes takes a toll.
And, I mean, the new line doesn't necessarily need a place.
No.
That's the beauty of fashion, as you mentioned. You know, for you, you've mentioned that you're a painter, you're an artist. Mm-hmm. Is there a point in your life where you think, okay, I've done fashion. Mm-hmm. Maybe I want to move on to different pursuits. Or is fashion going to be with you till the day you die?
I have a feeling it'll be until the day I die. I mean, in some facet, it's so part of me. And I think it'll morph into something, you know, maybe I would be a consultant to the same company and have a great team that runs it. Or I think it'll always be part of me. But more importantly than the fashion piece is that there will be always a creative piece. So whatever that is.
So the creativity is what pushes you, not
Absolutely.
Necessarily
yeah.
fashion.
The business of fashion is great because it's the catalyst to getting my designs out there, right?
Right.
But it's really about my designs. So I hope you'll stop by because they're pretty cool.
Oh, I walk by all the time. I will be honest. I'm too intimidated to walk
around. Oh, come on.
But you better
come in next time and say hello. I'll be insulted otherwise.
I have so many more questions, but we'll leave it there. The question's really about linen, Memorial Day, Labor Day, like a ton of stuff that I want to talk about. No. Well, Maria Pinto, world-renowned fashion designer, her shop, M2057 by Maria Pinto is in the West Loop. It's such a pleasure to have you here. And like I said, I am curious about fashion. I think a lot of people in Chicago are, and it's just really great to have someone of your caliber right down the street. So we appreciate you staying in Chicago, and congrats on all your success.
Oh, thank you very much.